Welcome to Scary Story Time with your host, Spooky Boo. I'm Spooky Boo, and I'm here tonight with scary ghost stories from the internet. At the end of the show, you can call in your ghost stories at 646-787-1694 and tell me all about what creeped you out. If you would rather I read your story to people during the first part of the show, visit www.scarystorytime.com and click on submissions to find out how you can send in your scary story. You can also listen to archives of my show that are no longer on the podcast at www.scarystorytime.com and click on archives to join Patreon. Now, let's begin. Story number one, Bedside Stranger. So horror fills your veins with a feeling like no other. Well, lucky you. You are exactly who he needs. When you're in bed and you hear a creak, don't think for a second it's the house settling, because it's him. Have you ever woken up in the middle of the night? It's no coincidence. It's him making you wake up. He knows you're scared of him, because every night when you turn off that light, you rush away as fast as you can, not checking any rooms, because in the back of your mind, you know he's there, and you're too afraid to look. When you finally fall into the realm of sleep, he'll stand above you, watching. When you're lying on your side, not daring to turn around just in case something greets you, that's him. Right when you're about to doze off to sleep, he'll make a sound to keep you awake. When you finally get the courage to turn around, he will disappear. But if he doesn't, he'll make your death as slow and as agonizing as he can. Now you should try and get some sleep, and remember to check every last room. Sweet dreams. Story number two, Behind Your Eyes. My grandma used to live in a house that was ancient. The house was falling apart and had a termite infestation. We had told her many times that she could move in with us if she wanted to, but she always said that she liked the house. 4 years ago, she passed away. It was a really tragic event. I didn't know what the cause of her death was, so I never asked. Probably natural causes. Her house was left to rot. It was abandoned. My mother fell into depression after my grandma's passing. She didn't want to talk to me or to anyone. She just locked herself in her room and only came out when she had to go to work or to the bathroom. My dad worried for her. I wanted her to get better, so I started thinking of things that would make her happy. After going through many ideas, I finally came up with the perfect one. Her birthday was coming up, so I wanted to get her a present. I thought that getting her something that Grandma had owned would make her feel as if Grandma was still close to her, so that is what I decided to get her. I knew that most of Grandma's stuff was still in her house, so I was going to go to her house and take something from there. I grabbed my backpack and my phone and hurried out the door. Good thing her house was close by. I entered the front porch. The smell of old wood lingered in the air. I tried to open the door, but it was locked. I checked if there were any open windows, but there weren't any. I checked the back of the house and was surprised by something. There was a cellar door. I walked towards it and tried to open it, and to my surprise, it opened up. The only thing I saw beyond the door was darkness. I didn't have a flashlight on me, but I still decided to enter. Luckily enough, light came from the outside to let me see what I was doing. There was nothing at all at first glance, just trash and dirt. But at a second glance, I noticed a brown door in the corner of the room. I walked towards the door. My hands were trembling with fear and my stomach was full of anxiety. I had no idea what the resolution of this was going to be. I reached for the doorknob. It was cold and dull. I started twisting it slowly. The door opened and I forced myself into the room. I thought of going back, but it was too late. I nervously swallowed saliva and progressed to my destination. The room was dark and humid. The smell of dust filled the air. My eyes quickly darted towards a white box that was sitting in the middle of the room. The box looked like it had been beaten up. It had wrinkles and some writing on it. I walked towards it. I couldn't tell what the writing on it said, but it looked like it was gibberish. I lifted the box up and put it in my backpack. I wasn't going to waste time opening the box. I had to leave. I advanced to exit the room when I heard a whisper coming from behind me. At first it sounded like it was just the wind shaking a tree, but then I began to distinguish words. "Where are you going?" Goosebumps raced down my body. I looked behind me. The thing that was behind me was almost inexplicable. It was a young woman. She was missing half of her body. The skin on her face was torn apart, and you could see the muscles twitching and the blood spurting out. She also stunk of rotten meat. She looked at me. I was in shock. I didn't know what to do. "Should I run?" I thought. "My eyes. I want them back," she rasped. I ran out of the room as fast as I could. I went up the stairs and exited the house. I started to slow down when I was halfway to my house because I had to catch my breath. What had I seen back then? When I got home, I hurried to my bedroom. I tried to open up the white box by hand, but I was unsuccessful. It had too much tape on it. I went to the kitchen and got a knife and cut open the tape and the box. A pair of eyes looked back at me. Inside the box was a pair of rotten, wrinkly, veiny, disembodied human eyes. I instantly let out a yelp. I didn't know what to do with them. I noticed a piece of paper behind the eyes. I went to my trash can and emptied out the eyes. I took out the paper. It was a picture of a young woman, exactly the same young woman that I had seen in the cellar. Then I heard something behind me. I turned around and discovered my dad giving me a confused look. "Why are you holding a picture of your grandma?" he asked. Story number 3, Beneath the Ground. The city was never expected to grow so large. Originally, it was thought that it would be a small town with big opportunities for aspiring farmers, as the Midwestern soil is rich and hardy. But the people who settled this land never knew that this place would soon house factories, bars, and on top of all of that, crime. The first burials of those who settled this area are said to have taken place in the 1830s. As this town was originally belonging to the Native Americans, much of it was built atop of burial grounds. In fact, even some of the burials weren't Native American. In that day, if a relative died and there was no nearby cemetery, after some funeral rites practiced by your nearest holy man, you'd simply bury them in the dirt deep enough so the animals wouldn't disturb their corpse, and you'd be on your merry way. That was just the way of things back then. But once more, nobody expected the city to grow large. In a land full of unmarked graves, you could only imagine what would happen. A majority of the city is built over the final resting place of hundreds, perhaps thousands, of bodies. Those who believe in spirits tend to broadly expect and believe one thing: do not disturb the dead. And these dead have been quite disturbed. The Harrisons were just a normal American family looking for a pleasant home in the Midwest. When they had found a lovely place next to a popular diner, they decided to move in just about right away, unaware that something was amiss. They moved in quickly, and it didn't take long to realize that something just wasn't normal. Knocking and rapping at the doors, windows, and inside the walls could be heard without any explanation. The son swore that he even heard footfalls back and forth in the hallway, only to call for his parents. Nothing turned up, so they assumed that it was simply their son having a nightmare. This went on for a while until Mrs. Harrison grew sick of it. "That's it. I'm getting Sandra to come over here and see what's going on." "Sandra? You mean that kooky psychic friend of yours?" her husband asked, raising an eyebrow. He never believed in any of that psychic crap. That was that, though. Mrs. Harrison could be a stubborn woman, and her husband wasn't about to stand in her way. Sandra came over after a long discussion. It was decided that a seance would be in order. Perhaps if they could communicate with what she said was a ghost, they could put it to rest. The entire family agreed, although Mr. Harrison did so reluctantly, and Sandra lit a candle and began to speak out to the disturbed spirit. The family was gathered around the table, and the familiar knocking sounds began to be heard all over the house. Their young son was crying in fear, and his older sister was trying her best to comfort him. Despite her own terror, her eyes were bulging as she looked to her parents for reassurance. Dishes were rattling, and cupboard doors were slamming and opening repeatedly, again with no normal reasoning. Sandra, meanwhile, despite the chaos at hand, had a pen and paper in front of her and was whispering, erratically yet mildly, flinching and convulsing. Soon she reached out with one hand and scrawled something onto the paper. She opened her eyes as the sounds had come into a grinding halt. The spirit that haunts this home died long ago. Mr. Harrison just seemed angry. "That's it? That's all? Is there anything we can do?" he spat. He still didn't believe this psychic nonsense. Displeased with his tone, Sandra simply shoved him the notebook. In sloppy and ugly handwriting that looked nearly illiterate, much unlike Sandra's writing, two words were written. Mr. Harrison wanted to think it was a joke. It read, "Under porch." He, the strongest member of the family, began to dig under the porch, and to his jargon, Sandra seemed to be correct. He found bones scattered about 3 or 4 feet below the topmost layer of soil. The authorities were spoken to and a proper burial was arranged. The Harrisons were never plagued or disturbed by the spirit again, and their children could peacefully sleep at night. Story 4, The Boxer. 1, 2, 1, 2, punch. It's hard being a newcomer in the boxing world. Getting beaten up by other boxers isn't easy. Being scolded by your coach whenever you lose a match is a hard pill to swallow. The hardest thing, though, is constantly letting your family down to the point that they won't even acknowledge you or tune in to your matches. After losing so many matches, it does things to your brain. Kind of breaks you down, really, but I was determined. I will be a great boxer, the best boxer, a champion boxer. Sweat trickled down my forehead as I faced a reflection of myself in the mirror and shadow boxed. I was shuffling to the left and swinging to the right, assaulting the air in front of me. I had an important match ahead of me today, my final match to be precise. His name was Edward Cartanego, a famous European boxer who I challenged in an attempt to just fly to the top of the food chain. He was about 5'10", muscular, had brown wavy hair, and he was very fast. By fast, I mean he would throw a punch and you wouldn't even realize what happened to you until you got up off the floor, disoriented. I could take him and beat him. I will do everything I can to make it to the top, everything, I proclaimed to my reflection. I put on my yellow and black boxing gloves and laced up my jet black boxing shoes. Edward entered the locker room while I was gearing up. He stopped and chuckled. He walked straight up to me and shoved me up against the lockers. "Listen here, rookie. There's no way you can beat me. I only accepted your challenge to make a drooling fool out of you. I'm going to break you down and make you quit being a boxer because sissies don't belong here." He laughed and strolled out of the locker room with such relaxation because he didn't view me as a threat. His words cut into my brain and were all I thought of from now until the match was over. I am a threat. I shadowboxed a few more times to warm up, then left the locker room area to make my grand entrance. As I made my way to the ring and made my pre-match preparations, the show lights came on and the bell finally rang. There I was at my corner, squaring up to Edward, gloves held high, ready to block any of his lightning-fast strikes. He quickly jetted towards me, and without even giving me a chance to react, he struck a blow to the left side of my ribs. The shock crippled me as I heard my bones crack inside of me. As I fell, he struck a blow to my face. My head whiplashed backwards with such force that discs C8 and C7, and those had been dislocated in the past, which is why I knew their names, near my spine were moved out of place. I fell onto the floor, crippled by the early blow. This can't be happening to me. I am a threat. Before I finished uttering the words, he quickly bolted over to me and swung downwards. He He punched me straight on my chest over my heart. I crashed onto the floor with my heart unbeating due to the impact of that punch. I heard the ringing of the bell, signaling that the match was over, flashes of light surrounded me, and I heard the footsteps of his victory. I was asked if I was all right. I didn't speak. They shook me around. I didn't move. They looked into my eyes. I didn't blink. They assumed I was unconscious, not realizing that Edward had snatched my only hopes and dreams, my life. I was lifted and brought up to the locker room. No attention was brought to my slightly loose head dangling from their arms. They placed me over the locker room benches. My skin was starting to grow pale white, and the parts of my body that were struck by his hits were now black and blue. A trickle of blood slipped down the side of my mouth, hitting the floor and eventually gathering up into a puddle. 2 hours passed, and I was still in the locker room, lifeless. Nobody knew I was in here. In fact, everybody had left. They completely forgot about me, dead in the locker room. I was alone until Edward walked in to grab his extra boxing gloves. Still in the locker room, hung over his lustrous metallic locker. He stumbled across my body and he chuckled just like he did before the match. He lifted me up and I heard the opening of doors as I was being brought somewhere. What was he going to do to me? Hadn't he done enough? Cold air brushed against my body, and then I was surrounded by pizza boxes, booze, tissues, and plastic bags. I was thrown into a dumpster. Although I was lifeless, I was furious. Absolutely furious. I was furious that I'd lost to him. Furious that he didn't respect me. Furious that he desecrated my body. As I lay in the dumpster, he leaned in and whispered into my pale white ear, "I broke you, and you will never return to boxing. Sissies don't belong here." As he walked away, he heard the sound of trash bags being thrown against the red brick walls. He turned around to see my pale, white, black, and blue body jet up out of the dumpster. I violently snapped the moved vertebrae into place. The snap and pop caused Edward to cringe as I relocated my own dislocated head into place. I lifted my head up high, looked at him straight in the face, and grinned. I lifted my boxing gloves in front of my face and took 2 steps before jetting towards Edward. I was faster than him, stronger than him, and my moves were silent. He didn't realize what had happened until all he saw was my cold and dirty gloves strike his face, then nothing. I am a threat. Edward was never heard of again and was presumed dead. Investigation was to put an end after 2 months of searching for his body. As for me, I was never looked for. My body was never found, and no one seemed to remember me. The arena was closed off after constant reports of boxers missing after matches. For those boxers, after their hard-won matches, all they heard was a sepulchral voice whispering, "I am a threat." Story number 5, A Bag of Candy. As a little girl, I was always fascinated by plays, musicals, and in general, the arts. Having a talent for acting early on, I didn't so much want to become famous as I wanted to entertain. Not only did I want to act, I wanted to know the workings of the whole shebang. Just as much as an actor remembering their lines, lighting was important, cues were important, and generally, forming the correct environment for pleasant viewing happened to be part of what I wanted to learn. The stage at my college was built long ago, and to be honest, I'm not quite sure when. It's located inside a place called Schilling Hall in the university I attended. I do recall mention of it being renovated in 1953. It's very old-fashioned, though, as it is meant to host live performances. There are rows upon rows of seats, and above it all is a huge balcony for other people to watch from. I've never seen the place packed, but I'm hoping the next time I act it will be. There are all kinds of rumors that this place is haunted, but of course I've never seen any evidence, and being the type of person I am, I won't believe anything until I see it. Previously, I'd seen people going up onto the balcony and leaving a few pieces of candy on the rail for this ghost. I honestly think the cleanup crew would just pick it up and toss it, so it was a waste of time, in my opinion. Now see, this ghost was described as a little brown-haired girl, about 7 is what most people guessed, with her hair cut into a bob. She wears a white dress with a pink tie around it. She is simply called the Rail Girl, due to appearing near the balcony rail to those who have seen her. I didn't used to believe in her, but I certainly changed my mind after a few events. A friend and I were chatting over lunch one day, and he, being quite superstitious, believed in the paranormal. He was yammering about how the little girl might be there, like she could have been a victim of murder, and she was built onto the walls or might have fallen from the balcony to her death. I rolled my eyes. I highly doubted there was a ghost at all, so I told him quite simply, "Ryan, shut up and eat your sandwich." And he proceeded to do so with a sheepish grin. He knew I didn't believe him, but he always came to me with his harebrained ideas. As time passed, I worked in the auditorium, cleaning things up and checking the stage. I preferred the role of an actress, so I wanted to see how things worked and operated, just in case I didn't land a good role in the play or one of the newbies needed a guiding hand. I was sweeping up the stage, although it wasn't really that much of a mess, but I wanted it looking great for the next performance. I thought I heard footsteps. I'll note that these were not the typical heavy footfalls that you mention in most scary stories. It sounded like a child running. I stopped for a moment and heard nothing. I couldn't discern which direction it was coming from, so I assumed that Ryan had left a tape player on behind the curtain to give me some of the evidence that I would require to believe any of this. When I didn't hear the sound anymore, I still checked behind the curtains and in other areas where most wouldn't lend a glance to for a source of the sound. I found nothing. I spent a few times in that theater alone, cleaning up and simply surveying the area for anything being amiss. Most of my nights were mundane, nothing happened, and any ideas of the Rail Girl left my mind. I did, however, realize my cellular phone went missing. I gave an annoyed little huff and started searching for it. I did know where I left it, and it wasn't when I checked. I only found it when it began to glow and vibrate from a text I received. It was sitting on the arm of one of the chairs in the auditorium, and I knew that's not where I left it. That's not where the weirdness ends, either. One night when I was going to get my things out of the dressing room after rehearsal, I heard weeping. I froze in my tracks, only looking around to see if I could find the source. I shouted in anger at whoever was the cause of the sound, "Stop it! This isn't funny!" I admit, I was a little scared. The weeping stopped, but I had that awkward feeling of being watched. Ryan and I were working together on the stage later. We were setting up for another play's rehearsal. He left a few pieces of candy on the rail, and I laughed to myself, viewing it as some sort of ritual sacrifice. As we were setting up, the fog machine started to run by itself. Ryan's eyes bulged, and he ran to turn it off. It wasn't even on. Furthermore, it wasn't even plugged in. He decided that maybe 3 pieces weren't enough and scurried over to lever half the bag. Needless to say, I wasn't giggling anymore. A few nights later, I got on stage to practice with the others in the play. Ryan, who mostly played minor roles and made props, as he was creative in that way, just spoke up to our leading lady. "Hey, Karen, did you bring any candy for the Rail Girl?" I didn't say anything. I had a sneaking suspicion that she was real, not that I would give Ryan any of that glory of knowing. Karen just laughed scornfully after a scoff. "Why would I leave candy for a stupid ghost? I bet it's not even real." I kept quiet. That's about the same way I felt a couple of months ago. The rehearsal went as mostly planned. I had no idea why they picked Karen for the leading role, but I figured, as bad as it sounds, that she got it by coercing our teacher in the most lewd of ways. She was rumored to be a slut. I did manage to keep up with my actions and lines, despite her emotionless acting. Just as she was getting off the stage at the end of the rehearsal, I almost let out a frightful cry. 2 pale hands reached for the steps, and she didn't even notice as their fingers curled around her ankle until it was far too late. Those little fingers tightened around her ankle, and she stumbled in an attempt to get free of them. Her feet were pulled. out from under her before she could utter a single sound, and all I could do was stand back and watch. As she fell, I saw those tiny pale hands retreat into the wood of the steps and vanish without a trace. I heard a sickening crack as her head connected with the solid floor. I was terrified. Although I didn't like Karen, I didn't want her hurt, or even worse, dead. Fortunately, I saw no blood pooling, but I could tell by the way her hands landed that she had tried to catch herself. After being looked over by one student that wanted to be a doctor and was simply acting as a hobby, he noted that she was just knocked out. She came to a few minutes later, rattling on about how someone tripped her. I could have sworn I heard a little giggle, but perhaps it was just my imagination. After Karen's injury, she said she wouldn't return to the theater, so I was to fill in for her role. I was happy about that much, not so disturbed by the ghost, but made somewhat nervous. I still practiced with a strange feeling of someone watching me. A few thoughts ran through my head. Should I have brought candy? I didn't let it disturb my practice. I had most of my lines memorized, and I could ad-lib some things with decent success. It was moments before a little girl just peeked her head in the back door of the theater and looked around and fled. She fit the descriptions I had heard, but I continued to act. I dug around my purse and left a small bag of candy on the rail before I left. I did the same thing the day of the play, and all went smoothly. Weeks later, I was working in the balcony control room and messing around with the lights and whatnot, simply figuring out how they worked. I was also reading a book and studying in there simply because the girls that I shared a dorm with would probably be loud, drunk, and obnoxious at this hour. I told a few of my friends where I would be, so I heard a knock on the door. I went to answer it, thinking I might be needed for something. I opened the door and saw nothing at first until I looked down. A little girl with short brown hair peered up to me, as if expecting something. "Can I help you?" She stared at me, swaying back and forth in her white dress. She gave me a simple answer, "No." She vanished before my eyes. I was spooked. I didn't go there alone after that. I still go to that theater some days and occasionally even act there, but every time I remember the rail girl and I make sure that I leave her a bag of candy. I can't say I don't believe in ghosts anymore, but I can certainly say that she made my time in college quite interesting. Story number 6, Grandma Lily. I recall my grandma's life and death only as I remember my mom telling me. From what I can understand, on February 2, 1998, my grandma fell victim to a car accident and died in the hospital sometime later. She was the last of my grandparents on both my mom and dad's side to go. The rest had died a long time before I was born. I was only 3 years old at the time, and I have a hazy recollection of attending the funeral and seeing my grandma within the casket. I also vaguely remember being quite fascinated, as my young mind had not understood the concept of death. I had been traveling for most of my life, considering my dad worked for the United Airlines, so flying wasn't much of a surprise to me, even though I was only about 8. It was July 2002, if I recall correctly. And my mom had just landed in Chicago from Las Vegas, Nevada, where we were planning to live, and I still do. Customarily, we were driven by my Uncle Ray to my Aunt Linda and Uncle Joe's house. It was a pretty large house and was very cozy, to say the least. My mom and I shared a room upstairs, which I believe had been my cousin Lori's room before she moved out. After a strange coincidence occurred, my mom, Aunt Linda, Uncle Joe, and most of my relatives began to explain stories to me about our family reunions. This, in turn, led to talk of my Grandma Lily, the one who the reunions became based around after her death. She was a great woman, very intelligent, very kind, and very loving. She flawlessly brought up my mom and my aunts and my uncles. She was a role model for what every woman should be. On top of this, she was very healthy and had no medical ailments before her death, even with her growing age. She had been in her mid-70s at the time and possibly may have lived to a century had it not been for that fateful day. Hearing these consistently sincere stories from my mom, my aunts, and my uncles makes me wish she had lived so I could have met her. One thing so captivating about my grandma was that she was very loving, and she loved all of her children, her children's children, her friends, and everyone around her with a warm heart. Then came a night that terrified me to the point it still haunts me. It was about 2 days before the reunion, and my mom and I were getting ready for bed. We had to share the one bed in the room, which didn't bother me at all, since I didn't start sleeping on my own until I was about 9. It was about 9 or 10 at the time, according to the classical red text digital alarm clock that sat on the nightstand. I woke up in the middle of the night and glanced at the clock, and I remember it being 1:36 a.m. Rubbing my eyes and letting them adjust to the darkness, I saw that my mom had left the closet open. As my eyes finally adjusted, I saw a horrifying sight. It was a white figure, resembling an anthropomorphic cloud, vaguely shaped like a human, with no face and only barely discernible limbs. It looked like it was about to sprint across the room, as if it were a blurry shot of a runner in the middle of a race. I blinked my eyes and the figure had changed. This time, instead of looking like it was about to sprint across the room, it appeared to have its hands behind its back. It was staring at me with its faceless head, and I could only stare back, not knowing what to do. I was too frozen to even wake up my mom, who was in the same bed. I just stared with no idea what to do. I hadn't even realized how much time had passed. It seemed as if the morning had simply crept up on me. I recall still sitting in bed, having passed out for what seemed to be a short period of time. I woke to my mom getting ready to go to the mall to pass some time. I began crying, prompting my mom to ask me what was wrong. I explained what I had seen that night to her. She tried to rationalize it as a being white dressed in the closet, but there was absolutely nothing white in that closet, only dark clothes. I searched it thoroughly to be sure of this. She had no explanation for this and simply asked me why I didn't wake her up. I didn't know why then, and I still don't know why now. My Uncle Joe, Aunt Linda, and my mom all talked to me about it, and they said it was probably Grandma visiting and that I shouldn't be scared. It didn't change my feelings, though, and I remained scared. Years later, I heard that if a spirit is visiting a relative or friend, then the haunted won't feel fear when they see the ghost, despite the awe and surprise. This observation scares me that much more, since I was scared out of my mind by this entity. I refused to believe that it was my grandma. Up to now, I refuse to sleep with closets open, and I'm scared of waking up to see something staring at me. I still wonder what I saw in that closet and whether or not it was my grandma. When I go back to the reunions, I make absolutely sure the closet is closed, and I sleep with the light on in that house.
Hey, it's Spooky Boo. How'd you like stories with a thunderstorm and my ghostly music in the background? I love putting the music together and doing that kind of stuff. I do like using music from like Mew and others, but YouTube doesn't like it, so I'm starting to use my own. Also, for a while, the story is going to be, the show, is going to be from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. until it grows a little bit. Because the last hour, now the last half hour, needs full of calls. So, from 8:30 to 9, I know it's 25 minutes tonight because the stories were a little bit longer. But the lines are open. You could call in 646-787-1694. You can call in your scary stories. Somebody was trying to call in, and I'm not quite that familiar yet with the system, so I didn't want to interrupt it by clicking on the wrong button because they beep, and I don't know if you can hear that. So I'm going to have to do some testing with people one day and see what you can hear and what you can't, because I don't want it to beep in the middle of your stories. That would be really rude. But I do have a way where I could talk to people offline. I just don't know if it's going to interrupt. So anyway, how is everybody tonight? Looks like we have a pretty full room. Thank you for coming. Let's see here. Those stories were freaky. Which one was your favorite? The boxer, the actress, the ghost in the closet, or grandma's eyeballs? Is that all of them? No, I'm missing one. Which one was your favorite? They were all fun. Oh, and by the way, the show last night did exactly what I said it would. YouTube would flag that. Somebody would flag that as copyrighted material, even though War of the Worlds is in the public domain. So it's hidden right now until I get that squared away with the person who tried to, or the company who tried to claim copyright on it. They should have cleared it already. I don't know what's taking them so long. They should know better. But I will re-upload that soon, save it, re-upload it, and put it back up. And it will be ready. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe they did that. Yes, it was CD Baby's. It was CD Baby. And it's not entirely CD Baby's fault. It's the people who put out the CDs, the people they contract to. And then CD Baby was really good about my son's album because I told them, I said, that's my son and I have permission to use it. And they said, okay. And they removed it right away. So this, I don't know why it's taking so long, but it should be by now. It took me like almost the full, 30 days or 90 days. It took me almost that whole time to get them to remove Night of the Living Dead. So I don't know. You know, you try to do something different on your channel once in a while and you just get slapped. Grandma's eye sees all. Yes, they do, don't they? I wish I would have gotten more to the story of why her eyes were in the box. What happened to her? Did she get mutilated in the basement? Did somebody kill her and her eyes were gone? Not that I can remember that I went into it, but of course it was the granddaughter telling the grandson, I don't remember, telling the story. So of course that person probably would not know what happened while telling it. And by the way, I take your scary stories. If you don't want to call them in during the second half of the show and you'd rather have me read them, you could send them to scarystoriesonvideo@gmail.com. Or you can log on to the Spooky Boo website and post them as a story, and then I'll just go in and read it and modify it. That's probably easier than the email. And then that way I can read them in the first half, and then the second half, if you want to call them in instead, that's fine too. Just call 646-787-1694. Yep. Oh my goodness. So it's getting closer to Halloween. Those stories would have been perfect for a stormy Halloween night. I agree, Uncle Ulrich, in the YouTube chat, that Grandma's eyes was good. And Grandma's eyes do see all, Daniel. Yes, they do. They see everything. Those were six really short stories. I fit them all into a half an hour. But that's okay. So caller, who was calling earlier? The lines are open. You can call back and tell your story. I just usually, in the first part, I tell scary stories for right now, half an hour. So you just have to look at the description and see how long the scary stories will go on for. It's usually the first half of the show. Yep. We've had a lot of weird things happen around here lately. I constantly have my wallet and keys and other things disappear. This place is fairly new and nobody has ever died here that to my knowledge. So I don't know what's going on, but keys and my wallet and, you know, just small things disappear. And I search and search and search, and I look in the original place that I put them, and they're not there, so I search everywhere else, and when I come back, they're there. my kids are playing a game on me. I just happen when they're not home. So it's happened ever since that day. It happened before this, but it's happened more since the day I walked outside and I put the lawn chairs against the wall facing out. I walked around the house to find my rocking lawn chair so I could rock and write stories at the same time. And I came back around the house and one of the chairs was facing the opposite direction. I almost dropped the computer and whatever else I had in my arms. I don't remember that day. And at this point, I was just, oh my gosh, it scared the hell out of me. And ever since that day, more and more things have been happening, weird things. And I'm not sure if I was using the EVP little ghost finder thingy before or after that. But we always on that ghost finder thing. And, you know, people have said, don't take the ones on the web for real. But that was happening. And then that night I had the sound, when it freaked out when I was in the dark backyard. And there's always, it always shows on the radar, a little thing floating around. It also did something to my camera that stopped, and it stopped working. And I had to reset my whole phone. So that was probably a software bug. If that happens to you too, old uncle, things disappear. Wow. That's creepy. It's really, really creepy. And you know, I get kind of absent-minded sometimes when I've got a million things going on and it's hard to keep track. But this happens too much to be that. And it's not like it is misplaced because it appears in the place where I thought it was originally after I go looking for it. And sometimes I've gone back and looked like two or three times in that same place, and then it comes back. So, creepy. Really, really creepy. I don't know. If anybody has that happen to them as well, give me a call and tell me what happened if it's kind of spooky. That is spooky. Ooh. Yeah. So, anyway. Oh, scary ghost story night. Call in your scary stories, 646-787-1694. I'm only on until 9 o'clock tonight because it's a shorter show for a while. Getting some steam, getting some stuff in. I might read No End House. I read the first No End House like last year, and I might do the second and the third ones this week. I don't know, maybe, but only doing it for an hour and reading for half an hour gives me more time to actually run my other business, my affiliate marketing business, which I kind of put on hold for a while, and now I'm noticing. I'm noticing that I had put it on hold for a while, so I need more money coming in. Ouch. But I love doing this so much, you know. And that's why I'm making archives only available on Patreon so that people who want to listen to the archives, they can subscribe for a month or they can subscribe forever. I don't care. Forever's better. But if you want to go in and listen to all the old archives, they're going to be on there. Yep. In October, we have Jim Harold coming on the show on the 7th, which is going to be really amazing. He has a show called Campfire. I don't know if you've listened to it, but it's people calling in his show. They talk to him. I think it's pre-recorded, and then he plays it later. It's not exactly live like this is, but it's pretty fun. They have some pretty good stories on there, so I highly recommend his show. Yeah. And then we have a ghost Halloween special on the 20th. Oh, what day was I going to do that? A Halloween special on the 25th. And then the 31st will be, I'll just read stories. Maybe I'll read them while kids are trick-or-treating or something, and I'll read them out on the porch or something. I don't know. They'll sound pretty shitty if I'm out on the porch. So No kids come here anyway. We're scary. I'm a scary person. I don't know. They probably stay away from me going, we're not going to go to that house because that one's a witch. Just kidding. Anyway. So, you can call in your scary story. Somebody who was calling in earlier, they can call back. 646-787-1694. Call back and tell me your story. And let me know what kind of creepy things have happened to you. It's going to be lots of fun. Oh, thank you, Daniel. I'm not kid friendly. I'm not really. I've done my raising kids, and now I just want to be me. I love my kids dearly, more than anything in the world. I would do anything for them, but they're all grown up now. So now I just want to, you know, go be scary and do scary shit. I really put off my love for horror and other things for a while because, you know, I didn't want it affecting them when they're little, even though it didn't affect me. I mean, I've been watching Night of the Living Dead and movies like that since I was six. So it didn't really affect me. I think the scariest thing that I ever saw when I was a kid was that Pink Elephants on Parade by Dumbo. I had nightmares about that when I was a kid. I rarely ever have nightmares, but I remember when I was a kid, I was sleeping in my bed. I had a bunk bed. I was a spoiled child. I had a bunk bed, slept on the bottom, didn't share a room with anybody. In fact, I had two rooms. I made a mess out of one and took over the other one when my brother moved out. And then slept in my sister's room. But anyway, my bunk bed, I slept on the bottom, and I think we had probably just seen Dumbo or something, and I'm sleeping, and I have this dream that these blue and pink elephants have me on a conveyor belt, and they're chopping me into pieces, and they're dancing around while doing it. I was just like, holy crap. Oh, I didn't say that. I was young. And I got up and I turned on my bedroom light and I actually slept with the light on for the rest of the night. That was my first and only scariest nightmare I've ever had. Okay, the other nightmare that kind of freaked me out was like before 9/11 when I had a nightmare about three or four fires and then one small one. Yeah, that was freaky. Especially the next day after I woke up and that happened. Hey, no barking. Sorry about my squeaky chair and dog. That's just part of the show. Hey, what can I do? So, Pink Elephants on Parade will scare the hell out of kids. They really do. Anyway. So call in your scary stories. 646-787-1694. And tell me your haunted ghost stories. You know, I was thinking earlier about the time we lived in this house. And it was a two-story house that was really old. It looked like it had flood damage. The landlords pretended it didn't have any damage to it. They acted like it was the greatest house on the planet Earth, and it really wasn't, but it was pretty. It was quaint. I hate it when people say charming. I won't say it. They say it's charming. It's charming. No, it's not charming. It's quaint. Anyway, it looked like it had some flood damage and stuff that they blamed on us, but we didn't flood the house, so I don't know what they're talking about. Anyway, so the house always had issues. The doors would open by themselves, and the windows, the push-up windows would open while nobody was home. I thought I had an intruder for a long time until it happened when I was home and I went back up there and nobody was upstairs and there's no way in hell somebody can jump off that roof. The lights would go on. The ceiling fans would go on automatically. Things would just stop working like an electrical field. It's the same house where somebody was pushing my sons up the stairs. So these other things also happened in that house where the ceiling fans and the lights would go on and off. It's a really incredibly creepy place. We'd get bats in there all the time. And we'd tell the landlord about it. They're like, nuh-uh. They didn't believe us. We'd get bats in there. And unfortunately, when you get a bat in the middle of the day, the county tells you that that bat is possibly rabid because it's flying around the house. It's not their typical behavior. So we'd have to knock it down and bring it in. And I don't like that because, you know, they have to kill it before they do tests on it. You can't. Rabies dies immediately when the body dies, which is horrible. So, but you can't risk your kids getting rabies kind of thing, right? I mean, my kids are more important than bats, and I don't care who says they're not. You can, whatever. But the times where we could catch them, I'd bring them in. And it was just horrifying. And I went, let one out. I finally got one out of the house before I knew I had to bring them in. And it was just flying down the street, like, you know, flying into things and all this stuff. It might be because it's daytime and it can't see. I don't know. But it was really creepy. And they got close to us during the day, which is unusual. So that would happen all the time. Bats would just come into the house. And one night, my oldest son would have night terrors. He would get up and he would just start freaking out and screaming on top of the stairs and probably nightmares from the bats. And he would just like swat around his head and there was nothing there. And he'd swat around and freak out and scream and stuff. But he always had night terrors. And he's also the one that has the little white spot on the back of his head. So they'd get so mad at me telling me stories. So anyway, if I asked him today, he would say, I don't know what you're talking about. Because he either doesn't remember or he pretends like it doesn't happen. Didn't happen. Yeah. So that was the house we lived in. Absolutely creepy. I asked the previous people, the previous owners about the house. And she just looked at me and said, yeah, that's why we double bolted the front door because it would open on its own. And we'd hear a piano play in the middle of the afternoon before we didn't own a piano. And you'd hear a piano play in the house. I'm like, oh yeah, I heard a piano a couple times. I thought it was the neighbors. And she's like, no, that's not the neighbors. I was coming from the house because when you go outside, you can't hear it. And I was like, oh, creepy. Really super creepy. Quite a life, huh? Yeah, I think everybody could have a life like that. I don't think most people are attuned to it. They don't have an open mind or they close off their mind to it. And I think when they're close to the imitation or they're not thinking about something happening, they don't notice. Either they don't notice or they're not, you know, they know whatever is trying to contact them knows that they won't be responsive, or maybe they do try to contact them and they just don't think of anything of it. Oh, that window's open. Gosh, I forgot to close it earlier. You know, oh, the light's on. Maybe there's an electrical short. You know, there's always a reason for it. But when it happens every day, and the whole family notices, and then the person who lived in the house before you knows about it, you know there's something going on there. You know it. And people, it's funny because people walking down the street, I met one lady walking down the street, and she's like, you're living in that house, huh? I'm like, yeah, what's wrong with it? And she's like, nothing. It's just, you know, you're a single mom. So I was divorced by then. Just single mom living on your own with boys in that house. And it must be a lot of work for you. But when she was saying it, she was just, she didn't want to come right out and say it. You could just hear it in her voice, like, nobody wants to live in that house. And nobody would ever tell me what happened to it. I found an article one time online that said something about someone falling down the stairs, and it had the same address as the house, but I haven't been able to find it since. So I would love to find that article again and see if there's anything to it. Because the kids got pushed up the stairs. You know, they freak out. They're going, Mom, Mom, something's pushing me up the stairs. At least they weren't being pushed down the stairs, right? Yeah. That was quite a house. Really creepy. You know, lines are open. You only have 4 minutes to call in your scary story. 646-787-1694. 4 minutes left of the program. Yes, it is. So let me think back and see if anything else in my life is scary that I haven't told you already. I remember digging the yard in the house, the ranch we grew up in, and finding weird bones, but they were probably just from some animal. That place is really cool. I remember on one side of the property, it was like 6 acres, and on one side of the property, I found a geode, like half a geode, and then on the other side, I found the other half on the other side of the property, and they fit perfectly. That was really cool, but not spooky. It was really weird that I found it in two different places like that. Let's see. Someone's probably somebody's decoration at some point or something. I don't know. Although people didn't toss their junk out. That's the same place where when I was a kid, I was trying to catch bluegill in the creek because apparently they came down from the lake and got filtered into the stream. And so I was into our creek trying to catch bluegill, and these long black things with white dots on them wrapped around my arm. And I'm this little kid. I was probably 7 or 8 years old. And I'm looking down screaming and running to the house. I couldn't move my hand at first. They were wrapped tight. And I yanked my hand out and I was screaming and running to the house. And then we came back later and they were gone. So I don't know what the heck those were. Really super freaky. Hey, night companion, how you doing? There's only a couple minutes left because I'm only doing hour shows for a little while. They start at 8 o'clock and end at 9. And the first half hour is for scary stories and the next half hour is for phone calls. So tonight we didn't get any phone calls, but that's okay. People are probably expecting to call in at 9 o'clock. Maybe they'll listen to this tomorrow morning and get the message, and then they'll call in tomorrow night at 8:30. So I did it because I don't like rambling on about just anything during the last hour when nobody's calling. So people start calling in, and then we'll extend it to 2 hours. Hey, Reaper.
30 seconds.
How you doing, Reaper's Horror? It's almost over. Anyway. I mean, if somebody's going to call in, I can extend it right now, but I have the YouTube also set to 1 hour only. So I don't think I can extend YouTube while I'm live. I don't know. But there's 90 seconds left. So please, if you want me to tell your scary story, give me a call tomorrow night at 8:30 Pacific time. If you want me to tell it for you, send it to me on scarystoriesonvideo@gmail.com or start an account on www.scarystorytime.com. Start an account and just write it or paste it up there. And I'll read it from there. 60 seconds. Now it's it. The screen says 17 seconds. And it's not. So... isn't that funky? Funky. I don't know. Anyway, good night, you guys. Thanks for coming. I'll talk to you tomorrow night, and then we'll have a break. Have a wonderful evening.